I saw the trailer when I went to see Fantastic Four. They had the next Avatar trailer.
I saw it on YouTube.
Fire and
We're
Ash.
moving quickly, huh?
I was like, oh, it's airtime because it starts with a bunch of airships and then no, it's just fire. It's fire for some reason.
No, yeah, so we've done what? We've done jungle, we've done water, we're doing fire.
What is jungle? Jungle isn't an element. Is
Well,
it
plant,
earth?
right? Plant, you
Earth?
think? I would assume, yeah, I guess. Well, so what are the four
Plant isn't
elements
an
or
element
what?
either. It's earth, fire, air. That's the classic if
Wait,
we're
but didn't
right.
you
Okay,
technically
are we
get
going
all
to
of those elements in the first
Yeah,
movie?
are we going to throw in ether then, maybe?
Well, I don't know what the
My thought
fifth
is if
element
there's
is.
five
Is that
movies,
what's her name?
the
If there's
fifth element
five
is
mo-
love.
if there
That is love, you're right. Because
Have we learned
there's
anything
five
from the fifth
movies.
element?
Yeah.
So the
No.
in the fifth movie we'll get what's her name and she'll show up.
Lulu?
Lulu.
Lulu multi-pass.
Maybe. I don't know that the
Maybe
first one.
we'll go like Pokemon type style and we'll get to like fairy, you
Avatar
know.
Dark.
Yeah.
Iron.
Avatar Steel, Avatar Normal.
Man, it sucks to be a normal
I would
type.
love to see Avatar
I know.
normal.
Truly a normal type, just like the worst fucking type of Pokemon.
But actually, it is one of the most OP types because I think Ghost is immune against you and vice versa.
Yes, I believe that is correct. I don't know, man. Who wants to be normal? Who wants to be
One of my
normal in
favorite
this
attacks is a
society?
normal. I love Metronome.
Metronome's fun. I mean,
I love the weird moves, the weird gimmick moves that do nothing, like how Delibird
Splash.
just gives a present
Oh,
and it
yes.
like sometimes does a little damage and then sometimes it heals you.
Right. You
And like
do.
Smeargle's whole thing is he just paints.
Yeah. I feel like you have to be a special kind of chaos agent to like really want to use shit like that all the time, you know? Even with like Metronome, it's like they use Metronome, they used Struggle. You did half damage to yourself or something like that.
I would love
Like
to see like a pro Pokemon player that just uses like a Smeargle, a Delibird, a Clefairy just only uses Metronome,
Yes.
and like a Metapod that just hardens.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Why Do We Watch This, the podcast where three friends watch a bad movie, talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it all while drinking a themed cocktail. I am your host for this mini episode of the show, Brendan Drischler.
I'm Lee Delahanty.
And I'm Chris Revell.
And we are continuing. It is like 96 degrees or some awful shit outside. And so, thusly, we are continuing our summer mini series, our summer of unhinged musicals, with the last musical of the season, the final movie of the summer, which is going to be 1980s The Apple, directed by Menachem Golan, starring Catherine Mary Stewart, Joss Ackland.
Mary and Margulies.
Yeah, in like two scenes as the Jewish stereotype landlady.
And then there's
Vladek, I don't know how to say his name, but Vladek Scheibel is definitely like a character actor who's been in shit. So
yeah,
like maybe him.
including a James Bond movie, I'm pretty
Yes.
sure.
Yes, he was in From Russia with Love.
There's
So
definitely sort of like things I can't separate in my mind between the Apple and the shadow of the what is the opera, the opera one where they
Phantom
go
of
to
the
the new
Paradise.
Phantom of the Paradise.
Well, it should help to know that Phantom of the Paradise was pretty much exclusively just forms of rock, whereas the Apple is like, I don't know, like pop you hear in
Disco,
a fever
pop,
dream.
folk. There's a lot of genres popping into the Apple
My brain just put them in the
inexplicably.
same bin of like, I don't like this.
I mean, I was gonna, the difference I think is Phantom of the Paradise is good. The Apple is not.
Except I will also say there is like one and a half songs in the Apple that I really kind of
There's
like.
a couple of bangers on the Apple
Yes.
soundtrack.
So I just wanted to say, I went to the Apple's Wikipedia page and it
Yeah.
says, see also list of films considered the worst.
Just the worst.
Just the
Guys,
worst.
this movie is the worst.
I am very happy though that you picked what is kind of a classic. Ever since I believe you were the one that kind of showed the group
I think I was,
the
yes.
Apple.
Because.
Then we all got together again to see it when it came to the Brattle, which was a lot of
Yes.
fun. Yeah, this movie has been a recurring theme throughout our friendship. I love this movie. It's terrible, but I get a huge kick out of watching it.
Yeah, the Apple is kind of a big deal for me, which I will go into more obviously during the actual episode, so I don't feel the need to like cover all that now per se. But needless to say, it was a movie that I was pretty convinced was going to be the most unhinged musical we could possibly choose until I saw something like Summer and then quickly realized, oh no, there's more inept things out there. Having covered that, we will also, of course, be having a cocktail, because what's the point of watching the apple if you're not a little bit drunk while you try to, you know, soak it all in? So we are going to be doing a summer sangria, because it's been a while since we've done a sangria. And the sangria is going to be called the Magic Apple, Mystery Apple, Juju Apple, Voodoo Apple, Holy Apple, Sacred Apple, which is a lyric from a song. It is going to be one bottle of white wine, 2.5 cups of apple brandy, a cup of club soda, 3 apples, 3 pears, and a lemon. You slice the apples and the pears into pieces, mix the fruit slices with wine, apple brandy, and the juice of 1 lemon in a pitcher. Stir it well, refrigerate it overnight, top it with some soda water, give it a gentle stir, and serve. And that'll be good, because I haven't had sangria in a while, and tis the season.
Tis for sure, tis the season.
Yes.
I feel like it's going to, this is maybe going to be a challenge, but we should try to say the drink's entire name each and every time.
Yeah. I mean, I bet you, I certainly can, because I'm psychotic like that. And I've listened to those songs more often than I care to say.
Yeah, same.
I forgot the start of the song, of the drink's name. By the time you got to the end.
I'm sure you do, because there's a lot of words crammed in that drink name. So we've certainly got that to deal with. Okay, having covered all of that stuff, we can go into the mini episode. We sort of kicked around some ideas for a potential discussion, and what we landed on was doing a summer blockbuster review. So we're just going to kind of shoot the shit for a little bit about the big blockbustery movies of the summer, and one that's probably a little less blockbustery, but, you know, came out during the summer, so, you know, something that we can certainly bring
chat
up.
Chat about.
Yeah, which is good, because I have not seen it. So I have, of like any movie that one would consider to be a summer blockbuster, I feel like I've only seen two so far this summer. I've seen Jurassic World Rebirth and Superman. Lee, I know you saw Superman, Fantastic Four, and what was Life of Chuck? Is that
the
what's
Life
called?
Of Chuck, yeah.
Life of Chuck, yeah, which is the one that's not really a blockbuster, but worth discussing anyway.
Yeah.
And Chris, you said you had only seen Superman of like
just Superman,
summer
baby.
Movies. Okay.
I have not been as present at the movie theater as I
I have meant to be a little bit more active in the movie theater this summer, and it just kind of never went that way.
Oh, does Thunderbolts count?
When did was Thunderbolts spring? Actually, I feel like Thunderbolts is one of those things where
spring.
it's kind of like, but
I just googled summer blockbusters.
Yeah, it does feel like it's one of those things where like now summer movie season starts in like late spring, so like Thunderbolts probably counts, I would say. Thunderbolts. And did we all see Thunderbolts? I can't remember.
So
Chris, you didn't?
No.
Okay. All right. So I guess which one do we want to start with? Do we want to start, maybe we could start with Thunderbolts, just because that's chronologically the first one that came out. So Lee, I don't know if we ever actually talked about it too much ourselves, but what did you think of Thunderbolts?
I liked it a lot. I didn't need it to do a lot once it had Lewis Pullman in it, but
yes, that's fair.
The heir to the Pullman dynasty.
Yes.
However, it was on a wholly different note. I'll say this. I can say this in front of Chris. It's not going to ruin too much, but now I've been running a D&D campaign, and there's like a whole different lens that I don't know if you've ever done this as a writer, where you start to like look at, you partake in other consuming other stories and narratives, and suddenly you're like, wow, that's my story. Like, it is not, yeah. It's really not, but like you start to like see the same themes and like the same sort of like connections being drawn. Like, it's sort of like human pattern recognition doing too much work again. And so that was the Thunderbirds, one of the ones where I was like, wow, that is, I feel like I've like accidentally ripped off this movie in a lot of ways.
Lee, I shit you not. Whenever I watched Thunderbolts, I was kind of noodling around writing something for the past couple of months just to sort of have something to do in the evenings.
Yeah.
And I shit you not, when I saw Thunderbolts, I was like, fuck, if anyone reads what I'm writing now, they will think I'm ripping off Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Really unfortunate.
Some similar themes.
Yes.
I've thought that about like a lot of things. Like, enough things that are different enough that I'm like, a lot of this is just that these are big universal themes I'm trying to touch on. But there's just like some of the specific stuff that happens in Thunderbolts, I'm like, man, That's a bit similar to what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, without going into like too many specifics, is it having to do like, for mine, it was kind of just like the concept of like mental illness.
Yes.
And like the manifest. Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It was basically like mental illness as like, and especially with regards to like manifesting as, like, because I obviously, like, I do, I live in the realm of like fantasy or sci-fi, mm-hmm. mostly fantasy though.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically the idea of like, why your mental illness is actually manifesting physically.
Yes.
Sort of like physically depicted. And like, more specifically, it's not really quite this in Thunderbolts, but like, the idea of like, how it, when you have had trauma inflicted upon you, you can like repeat that cycle accidentally mm-hmm. or inadvertently. Mm-hmm. And the idea of that manifesting in a like physical way that affects other people, as opposed to like just, you know, you're being toxic or like you become a person that is also dangerous yourself.
Yes.
In a way that's more like, yeah, I, you know, do things like that. Things like what happened in Thunderbolts. Like,
things like the events of Thunderbolts without going into too much detail.
And having walked, I don't know, Brendan, how much you walked into Thunderbolts knowing, which I'm curious to know, because I spoil myself a lot and I Google like, who the fuck is this character that Lewis Pullman's supposed to be playing? And I like read his whole Wikipedia page. I'm not a comics person. And then I had a talk with the, if I'm not seeing these movies with you guys, I'm seeing them with the Bry's and usually Justin. And Justin's like the kind of most comic-y, nerdy person in that group that I can consult a lot of the time.
Right, right.
So I was like, Justin, I've read the Wikipedia page for this character. What is it like? What context can you give to? Because like Wikipedia is not always that great for context and things.
Right.
But I didn't get a lot of that until like after the movie. But I walked into the movie kind of knowing exactly or what the comic deal was. But the way that it manifests in the movie is very different from the comics, and well, job well done for doing that, because it's like a sort of great interpretation of that character idea.
Yeah, for me, basically, I went in knowing, like, so I did some research just by dint of the fact that I had not seen, what was it, Captain America Brave New World mm-hmm. beforehand. So I was just kind of like,
I had seen that,
okay. Which I did end up seeing later and did not need to. But I basically just kind of wanted to like do some Googling online and be like, oh, is there anything that's relevant in that movie that will matter for this movie? And the answer is more or less no, not really. Like there's a few, like it helps, you know that Bucky is running for public office and shit like that. But aside from that, it's like, it really doesn't matter.
Yep.
So just as part of doing that, it was kind
of assassin
like,
to senator.
Yes, I know. It's not the most outlandish jump anymore. So when I was just sort of going through that, I was getting a lot of articles that were like, oh, like, but like, who is this character? And they're like, and it's, you know, one of the things where it's like, you may remember how this character popped up in this other movie and things like that. And like how Taskmaster was a character in Black Widow who I kind of barely remembered. And I was kind of like, oh, shit, do I have to like think about who Taskmaster was and what her deal was?
No,
and then
really
the answer is no, you really don't. It does not matter that
much. I never saw Black Widow, and I was like, I'm meeting this person for the first time.
Right. And Rich hadn't either. And I gave him like a quick overview of like, oh, she was in this movie. David Harbour was in this movie.
Yeah.
And obviously,
the girl that phases through walls was in something, but I hadn't seen that movie.
She was
either.
In, Ant-Man and the Wasp, which like I remembered, but didn't remember. You know, it's more like I remembered that this was a character is kind of all I had. You know, I was like, I remember she go through walls.
You don't really need context for them showing up.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious why they're there and who they are.
Right. And everyone's kind of standalone in the sense that it doesn't really matter what they did in the past, except it's just kind of like, oh, these people have had like fucked up lives. And, you know, they're more or less villains in this story.
Yeah.
So
I had to say it was really great to see. I can't remember his name, but like shitty Tom Brady, Captain America.
Yeah. U.S. agent. I can't remember.
U.S. agent. Yeah. Whatever
Wyatt
his
Russell.
Name is.
Wyatt Russell.
Yeah. Wyatt. Yeah. Yester. Like be reduced to sort of like comic relief character.
Yes. Yes, it
just
was
like being an utter loser.
Yes, no, I did enjoy that too. Because
so did they like tone down his like psychotic
tendencies?
Like, because he was kind of a nutcase on the show.
He was. Yes, they also give him a little bit more of like shading and backstory in the movie than he got on the show too. So
yeah,
I think it kind of went a long way to making, the Falcon and Winter Soldier TV show. I don't want to say it made the TV show better, but like it filled in things that the TV show did also not touch.
Wasn't some of the like psychoticness supposed to be like the serum he was taking?
I think it's a little bit of that. Yeah. Like it's not that he's entirely a bad person. It's just that, you know, he's fucked up by essentially by the medication that he's on.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really I went in with like no expectations whatsoever for Thunderbolts, except I was like, I hope this is fun. That would be great if this was an entertaining movie. And I really liked it, actually. I thought it was probably one of like the better MCU movies of the past, I don't know, years, several years.
And what's her name was great. Florence.
Yeah, Florence Pugh was fucking great.
It's fucking amazing.
She's always great.
Yeah,
she's
no, she is. Great. She is. It's true.
But it's one thing to be good, and then it's another thing to like be really compelling and emotional in scenes with that goofy ass accent. Like
right. Yes. 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 Right. Right. You're
a step up.
Right. Yeah. You're like wringing emotion from like inherently ridiculous scenes, you know, and it's like good work, you know, like. Credit to you, credit to the director, credit to the writing. You're actually somehow making this work. Like it's actually it's a compelling portrayal of mental illness without seeming so aggressively on the nose about it, you know? Like it is obviously about mental illness, and the movie's not pretending that it's not, but like I think it's exploring it in a way that I found interesting and that I hadn't really seen before, especially in a movie like that.
Yeah. And it doesn't like have any like magical solutions either, right, which I thought was right. Good.
Yeah, no, I liked that too. Yeah, it's just there's you know, it's just there's work that has to be done is what it kind of amounts to in the end.
Yeah.
Which and I love Julie Louis-Dreyfus, so it was like fun seeing her getting to be ridiculous in a movie.
She's great.
Geraldine Viswanathan, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Oh, she's in that?
Yeah, she's in it too. She's a lot of fun also.
I love her from Miracle Workers.
Which one was she?
She was Julia Louis-Dreyfus's sidekick. Kind of until she kind of like turns on her a little bit toward the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's fun seeing her pop up and shit, you know, get that paycheck girl. but yeah, no, I don't think it's on like Disney Plus or whatever yet, but like you should definitely check out.
It will be soon, right?
Yeah, no, I'm sure it will be within the next like month or so. Whenever it's up there, you should check it out because I do think you would probably like Thunderbolt.
Lewis Pullman, she's such a sweetie.
Who is that?
Lewis Pullman.
Oh yes,
just a sweetie. He's a good boy.
Yes,
he's a prime good boy.
Yes, yes, that's true.
I do love the idea of Julie Louis-Dreyfus kind of being the Nick Fury of this
movie. Yeah, it's like Nick Fury who couldn't be bothered, basically. It's just like constantly kind of annoyed by the fact that everyone's like asking her questions and like second guessing her and being like, is what you're doing legal? And she's just like so upset by the fact that people are like, you know, putting checks and balances on her.
The like end bit with her is so funny, like the reveal of like when the they last go through the scene. Curtain or whatever.
It was
like it does kind of just turn into Veep whenever she's in a scene.
It really does turn into Veep. Yeah. Yeah, but that was surprisingly good, I think. Yeah. Is what I would say. Do you want to pop into Life of Chuck next? I think that came up afterward.
Yeah, I can talk about that. So yeah, I saw that with Faith, friend of the pod,
of course.
Occasional participant there.
Occasional participant, yes.
I don't know. I think I caught Faith just in time because Faith goes to see like 3 movies a week.
No, she does, yeah.
And that was one I was like, I actually want to see this one, and managed to like get in before she had already gone to see it herself.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't heard much about it except that I kept hearing the name The Life of Chuck, and then I think like fucking hell. Who's Amy Pond's actor? Gillian? Is it Gill?
Karen Gillan.
Karen Gillan. Is it Gillan her name? That bit right.
Yes.
Gilly.
Right, because she was on Comedy Bang Bang talking about it too, which I had heard. Yeah.
But yeah, Karen Gillan's in it. and she was on Comedy Bang Bang and she was interviewed. They talked about it and then basically like they didn't want to talk about the plot of the movie, but they said enough to make me go like, oh, this might be like a Lee movie.
Uh-huh.
It definitely is a Lee movie. I'll tell you that. I'll tell you one thing else. It's not a Faith movie. We walked out of that movie. I really liked it. Faith did not like it. We had a nice long like discussion about it afterwards about like why we liked and did not like it respectively. And what I kind of got away from the movie. I think you do have to like, it is a weird movie, and I think it is just divisive in this way, and I think it will be to anyone who watches it. You kind of, it is like old fashioned, kind of unrepentantly, in the kind of its like sentimentality and the view of the world, sort of not in a bad way, like not in like a racism is okay way, but just like, right. In a non-cynical kind of a way, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think Faith also found some bits of it depressing, where I found them uplifting. We had very different takeaways from certain things about the movie.
Uh-huh.
Or just like inspiring or whatever, but it's definitely like, it has themes that I'm very much into in movies. I will say it's like, it doesn't like, it's kind of, I think, like Walter Mitty, which is another movie that I kind of unrepentantly enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
In that it's not going to like stick with, it's not going to like, you know, I don't think it's going to fall into like any list of great movies.
Uh-huh.
And it hits harder when you're watching it, I think, in the theater or just during the time that you're watching it. And it might not linger in the same way that like really great media lingers.
Mm-hmm.
But it was good. Like, I came out of that kind of riding the high of it for a bit, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really good. I don't want to talk too much about the plot of it.
I mean, I know a little bit just because I know the short story upon which based. So like I do know the broad strokes. Certainly, I don't know how it functions as a feature length movie, which, you know, certainly like, seems like a challenge to me.
It kind of, I think, follows the book from what I read on Wikipedia, where there are like acts and intertitles come up and say like act two or whatever.
Uh-huh.
There is like a narrator, which is, I think, Nick Offerman. So there is a narrator. You will have to, you, so these are again kind of conceits that you kind of have to be okay with, just from a stylistic point of view.
Right.
The fact that there's occasionally a narrator setting things up, the fact that there are like hard act breaks.
Uh-huh.
However, there's like a through line throughout the movie that you have to follow. Like, I think I walked out of it having noticed one thing, and because you notice it because the narrator uses the term.
Okay.
But he calls a character in act two something that makes sense why he calls that character that in act three.
Mm-hmm.
And I had picked that up, and Faith was like, oh, I didn't think about that.
So you're actually just paying attention to different things about it, it sounds like.
Yeah, we definitely like, it's weird in that way, and it's I make a lot of right or wrong when I extrapolation when I watch things. Like, I do that thing like I always talk about where I fill in plot holes myself in ways that
yes,
make sense a lot
right.
of the time. But this one I think would have been deliberate, the one that I talked about. And yeah, there's stuff in Act One that like I didn't understand until like later on in the movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you still have like things to sort of track from the beginning to end of the movie, but it is like not a consistent sort of narrative journey, we'll say.
Okay. I mean, that tracks from what I
yeah,
know of it.
If anything could be said about it, I would say that it goes backwards, but that's even a bad way to describe it.
Right. I mean, it's like the three chunks are in reverse chronology.
Kind of. Yeah. But the first chunk really doesn't feel like anything. The first chunk is weird and kind of surreal.
Okay. Yeah. And I mean, I know the chronological ending of the short story, which I assume follows on the movie. Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah. So I think if you are, Faith also called it twee, which I strongly disagree with the application of that word here.
Uh huh.
I would call it earnest and sentimental, but I would not call it twee. I would call like a Wes Anderson twee.
Yes.
But I would not call this twee.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is something I do feel like I will probably watch at some point, just because like I like Mike Flanagan, the director. I think he has an interesting sort of like connection with Stephen King works. So like, mm-hmm. it seems like in theory, this is a very good pairing. I have heard, I mean, mm-hmm. I feel like much like what your in face reaction was, I feel like I've heard that from a lot of people who have either been like, wow, like this really like hits me and I found this profoundly moving, and other people being like, nope, I do not care for this shit at all. So it's almost just interesting to me because of that, I think.
Yeah. So, I compared it to Faith, which didn't make sense for her. Uh-huh. But I don't know if Chris, if you ever, how far you got in this game or if or when you're ever going to beat this game. But for me, it feels very akin spiritually to The Outer Wilds.
Ooh, okay.
Which is a video game that's it's like a time loop in space. And it's kind of, it's like Majora's Mask-y, where there's like puzzles you have to solve, but it takes multiple runs to solve the puzzles because you have to go through the time loop. And again, there's not much of like a I don't even want to say why it feels spiritually similar to that, but like it makes sense to me why it's similar. But it's kind of there. They touch on, I think, again, just sort of similar universal themes, I guess, of like, maybe I'll just say themes of ending and meaning.
Okay.
I'll leave it there.
Tracks.
I'll
certainly
have to check that out.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked it a lot. I really need to hear the second anyone else watches it. I need a third person to chime in on what they thought about this movie.
Yeah, once it's available.
Yeah, I do fear, like, I just sort of fear just kind of knowing past historical tendencies that I'm going to be the only one in the corner for the movie. But I hope I am not.
I'm open to it. We'll see. I guess the next thing that came out was Jurassic World Rebirth, which I could just talk briefly about. I literally just saw it this past week. So like I would not say this is a movie I have a whole lot to say about necessarily. It is probably the best of the now four Jurassic World movies, which is an extremely low bar.
So can you please now explain to us the chronology and what is real and what isn't as
okay,
of this movie?
Okay, so the three Jurassic World movies that came out previously all had like Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
So, and she was welded into those high heels.
Yes, they were in all three of them.
Damn.
And she moved to sensible
heels.
What
the fuck is Bryce Dallas Howard doing anywhere after the first one?
After the first one, she becomes like the head of a group that's like, we must protect the wild dinosaurs now, like, oh, we have sure. to intervene on their behalf to make sure that, because like there's something that will be brought back to life and now we have to like take care of them, like they're okay. a responsibility now. And the third movie is about locusts. It's extremely dumb. But so this movie, like, it does, you know, all the events of those previous movies have taken place. They name drop a couple of things, but none of the characters from those movies are in this movie. And all you really need to know going into it is that dinosaurs are kind of like out there in the world now.
Just like animals?
Yeah, just like animals. And they're like in very few places because they can only adapt to certain places, this movie states. And that's like kind of all you need to go off of from this. Like, basically, if you saw this without having seen any of the Jurassic World movies, all you would need to know is that like there are dinosaurs now and they more or less live in the wild. I'm trying, like, I guess what I would say in favor of it is that there are several good action sequences in it. There's a sequence like with a boat in the beginning with a large aquatic prehistoric reptile called a Mosasaurus that was really effective. There was what the fuck was it? I can't remember. There is a couple of other ones that I'm kind of blanking on right now, but I did think a lot of the sequences were like well directed and entertaining and had a good sense of forward motion and you know, worth your time. Certainly the movie feels so much like a video game in terms of like what the purpose is. Basically, like, we have to find the three biggest dinosaurs and extract DNA from them in order to possibly create a drug that will eradicate heart disease or something.
Wait,
like,
wait a second, so they're basically, to soft reboot Jurassic Park, they're making Deep Blue Sea but with dinosaurs?
I guess so. Yeah, to me, it was very much like a video game fetch quest kind of thing where it's like, find the three biggest dinosaurs stick this in them. Yes.
But that is also basically the plot to Deep Blue Sea.
Yes. No, that is kind of the plot to Deep Blue Sea. Yes. And there is a lot of water stuff in this one. So like perhaps there was some very direct influence from that movie. I could not say. But
Rennie Harlan was a silent executive producer. Yes,
yeah, he actually wrote the screenplay. Few people know that. So that's all well and good. The shit that I don't like is the shit that I have not liked about these movies for like a long ass time now, where like these movies are like so obsessed now with like mutant or artificial, like not mm-hmm. real dinosaurs. You know what I mean? Like they're making up like a weird dinosaur or something instead of just using like one of the thousands of actual dinosaurs that have existed. It's like, no, we have to make up a weird dinosaur, you know, like we can't just use one of the real ones. We have to make this is like the Distortus Rex. This is like a weird T-Rex mutant thing that exists, blah 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 blah. So I don't care about that shit. I don't care about the fact that like these movies have now been positing ever since Jurassic World that like people are used to dinosaurs now, like they don't really care about dinosaurs anymore, so like it's not really like cost effective to have a dinosaur zoo anymore, you know, when like in real life zoos exist. Zoos are things that exist. People like to see animals. If you see a cute dog on the street, you will probably be like, wow, a dog, let me get a picture of the dog. So I find it very hard to accept that like people will just be like, oh, a dinosaur, snooze, get on my, like, get on with your day at this point. So, like, I just think that that's, like, sort of like an inherently ridiculous starting point for a movie. So I hate that that's something that they were really going with.
It sort of seems to imply that, like, they are, the people who have made the film are, in fact, bored with the concept of dinosaurs, not other people. I don't know.
I think it's more just a contrivance to justify the weird shit that you want to do with it. And it's one of those things where, like, at this point, like, just make a weird ass monster movie, you know, just make a weird ass movie with, like, a mutant creature that you created that's like 40 feet high. And it's not a Jurassic Park movie. It's just a, you know, we made a weird monster.
When you talk about zoos or whatever and how people like zoos, my instant thought is, and this doesn't make for, like, exciting, fun action movies, but like, what are the new sort of regulatory bodies that have come out of the fact that dinosaurs are now back in the world, right? Like, do they fall under, like, endangered species? Is there another organization around, like, what you are and are not allowed to do with dinosaurs? Can you put them in zoos, or are they too dangerous? Like, I would love a movie that deals with the sort of repercussions of, like, what does a society and a civilization do with dinosaurs coming back into existence?
Right. No, I mean, I feel like those are things that the movies
Dinotopia, have all, anyone?
If only. I feel like those are all things that the movies have, like, paid lip service to lately, you know, where it's like they mention that that's a thing, but, like, yeah, like, it's just in a world where, like, we've established that dinosaurs can just be sort of, like, wandering around. We've had very little movies that are about, like, a family goes camping and, like, a T-Rex is there or something, you know, like, it just feels like that's your obvious thing right there. And yeah, there's also all the shit you said, Lee, about how, like, oh, like, what are, like, the problems that we have now? What is, like, what are, like, the international laws?
Yeah, they must be invasive species to something.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly. Especially when you consider the fact that, like, there are very small dinosaurs out there. Like, those things are going to be running around everywhere, and we're, like, never going to really be able to contain that shit, you know? So it's like the food chain is already being messed up because you have, like, tiny predators where there never were tiny predators before. So it's like, I don't disagree that there are stories that you could probably still tell, but it's like, we just have never found a good way to be like, but why do people want to go to Dinosaur Island? And, like, they still have not found that good reason. Like, somewhere at some point, someone will come up with a good reason as to why Dinosaur Island needs to have people going back to it, but I just don't know what that is, you know. And that's kind of, like, the biggest takeaway from these movies, is that we've never found that answer. But anyway, so Superman.
Oh my god.
Which we have,
hey guys,
all seen.
Finally a Superman for me, one that grew up listening to pop punk and emo music.
mall pop punk.
Millennial Superman is here.
He had a swoopy haircut.
Yep.
I had a great time watching it. Yep. I loved that it spoke to something which I have been seeking from superhero media but not finding lately. And I am encouraged by the fact that the new Fantastic Four movie appears to be headed in a similar tonal direction. But I just appreciate the, like, more lightheartedness. I appreciate this, like, turn towards, like, just Silver Age goofy shit. I love the inclusion of Crypto. I love what a fucking chaotic bad dog.
Is Crypto like that in the books, or did they just choose to make Crypto, like, a poorly trained dog?
They chose to make him that. I mean, he's sort of whatever in the books.
Yeah,
but, right.
I think that was, like, that was a choice for this movie.
Yeah, and a very smart choice.
I'm confused about Crypto. Do they have not only do they have evolved exactly humaniform looking aliens, but also dogs?
Also dogs
on Krypton.
Yep. Also cats. Also like it's just what, like, you really can't think too much about this sort of thing. Like, it's just like, it happens.
You will not be rewarded for it.
No, there is nothing you will glean from getting from doing that. But yeah, that is just how it worked. They look just like us. They have animals that look just like some of our animals. There it is. Yeah.
Well, because they definitely weren't operating within a comic book landscape where anyone was, like,
right, of course, it was
challenging,
like,
the logic of it. They were just like, yeah, it just is.
Right. It was the 30s and 40s. You know, it's just sort of like, yeah, of course he has a dog. Why wouldn't he have a dog?
Right.
Like, it's just like,
it's American to have a dog.
Yes, right.
And
exactly.
Then, of course, his cousin, Supergirl, is also going to find her way to the same planet. Duh.
Right. Right. Yeah. And of course, like, despite us saying that, like, all the Kryptonians died when their world exploded or whatever, there's a bunch of other guys who are out there too. Like, you know, like, well, he has some family members and there's some other people, and, you know, there's the Forbidden Zone. It's just like, it is one of those things where it's like, we immediately start walking back the premise that Superman is, like, the last son of Krypton. But, like, that's just, you know, otherwise it's like, well, what are you fucking writing about?
I feel like if you were to give it that much weight, you take it too seriously. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's fine. I was going to say, I still have one kind of problem, I think, with the Superman movie, which is I thought that it was weirdly, for a movie where Superman is like rescuing squirrels in parks, over and like, you know, cradling the dead automatons or whatever. I thought it was weirdly callous to throw his clone into a black hole. His clone, who for all intents and purposes may have been brainwashed, or needs must when the world is ending.
That would be my argument too. But I see your point.
There was not a lot of like emotional conflict about it.
Right.
No. I imagine they're going to set him up and he's going to come back as Bizarro.
That's what I feel like. That's
fine
that
they're
assumes.
Setting him up, but like. I don't care if he's going to come back.
Decision.
He didn't really have any sort of immediate regret or downfall from that.
The movie doesn't frame that as a like terribly heavy or
I do agree that given all the work that the movie does to set up like what his moral code is and like how he functions in this world, it is perhaps a little strange to like kill yourself.
And
then just sort of be like, well, needs of the many.
And then just close up a dimensional rift and
go home.
I don't know. I didn't need a lot, but I didn't get like that there was like any conflict in his face much.
I think that's a valid point. I will.
It's a minor gripe. To be fair, like I don't know what was going on with that clone, but I don't think he knew what was going on with that clone. Like I don't know if it's like has no will of its own, or if it's just like been raised as like a machine and not a person, and that had not had a chance at life to like. Be himself.
Right. Yeah. I guess it's just sort of a question is like, what is the clone? You know, at the end of the day, like, what is this thing exactly?
There have been, and this could be references, it could not be. I don't really know what James Gunn is deciding to do with that, but like Ultraman, which is what he went by before you realize he's a clone, was just like a clone of Superman.
Yeah.
And then also there's another comic book series that I have no idea if James Gunn is going to make it real within the DCEU, but. There's also the Authority, which is basically what if progressive-minded superheroes created a benevolent dictatorship? And that's where the engineer is from, the robo thing.
Mm-hmm.
Although she looks very different in the comic books than she does in the movie. Anywho, so there is also an Ultraman who is basically their Superman stand-in in that. So depending on what the plan is, my thought is that this is not the last we've seen of the clone. Either it's going to set up bringing the Authority into things, or that's our play on like Bizarro's.
Mm-hmm. I did like the way the engineer looked in the movie, though. I was just throwing that out.
It was a cool look.
Did I forget about a robot lady?
I think that's who you're thinking of.
No, like I'm not her thinking, hands. Who is it? Where was she in the movie?
She was
with Lex all the time.
Yeah, she showed up at the Fortress of Solitude in the beginning when they were breaking in.
I would not describe her as robot lady. She was tentacle nanobot lady.
Okay,
it was very tentacly everything that she did. When you say robot, I picture like the guys in Superman's little compound. Sexy lady in a suit.
Right. She's like cybernetically enhanced.
Shape-shifting
like
abilities.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I know that they're nanites, but like, yeah.
I loved that the Kents were just very normal people.
Yes, I love the scene where they're like, where you first see them, where they're talking to Clark on the phone and it's on speakerphone and she's still like yelling like down the phone. I was like, boy, like, does that nails like my dad?
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're like kind of not looking into the phone at all. Right. They're just kind of like near it. Yeah.
Yes. I thought that Corin Sweat was a great Superman.
Yes.
I loved Rachel. What's her
Brosnahan?
Brosnahan. Yeah. Thank you, Rachel Brosnahan as Lois was great. I'm so glad that we have sort of like the traditional Lois and Clark kind of banter relationship, which we really didn't get in any of the Zack Snyder movies.
Or like any chemistry or sense of connection between the two of them.
Right. No. This movie I think is a testament as to why you do chemistry tests. For actors in movies, because like when you pull it off, you can really pull it.
Yeah. I love their interview scene. I think it's
yeah, the interview scene was one of the best ones.
Yeah, no, the interview scene was a lot of fun, which is also like something you don't really get a whole lot of
in
Super, like a lot of like you don't get a lot of like talky scenes where characters are just sort of talking about you know, what like
felt like the old Lewis and Clark TV show.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to have to say about Dean Cain, we can say a whole lot about Dean Cain. But when it was on, the show was a lot of fun.
Did you see, by the way, that because he complained so publicly about quote unquote woke Superman, he got a fucking profile in Vanity Fair about how he's like standing up for traditional values in today's Hollywood. Great.
Take why it up with Vanity Fair then.
Yeah, why would Vanity? Yeah, that's on Vanity Fair. That's
that's
I just thought it was funny.
Platform.
Like, well, there's no there. He just was doing dumb Dean Cain bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, he's,
yeah.
Anyway,
trying to think of like other. Oh, I thought I was really worried when I saw the first previews that it was going to be kind of overstuffed. You know, just because like as soon as other superheroes showed up, I was like, oh boy, like can we not just have like a movie with Superman anymore? Can we not just have like one guy? And I think by and large, it kept all those plates spinning pretty well.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty minimal with, like, there's one other group of boys and girls.
Right, right.
And they're small.
Girl singular.
It's not,
yes.
like, a big team.
Yeah, no,
I didn't know any of them except for Green Lantern, and it didn't matter.
I did not know Mr. Terrific, like, at
I
all
did.
Going into
he's
this.
He's a cool character. And I'm glad they're, like, front-staging him so much because he's much bigger in the comic books and, like, has never really showed up in any screen adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
He sometimes shows up in, like, animated. Like, you've ever watched Animated Justice League, which is really good, by the way. He shows up there, like, occasionally. But I am glad he's getting more of a front. Because he's such an odd character concept. He has a cool look.
Does he fight with stress balls in the comics as well?
Yeah, basically.
What is his deal? Is he just really smart? Or is he, like, okay.
He's just
a smart...
Yeah. A like incredibly advanced like genius engineer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like
he's Batman.
His,
but, like,
his
way
style
better.
Is different from Iron Man, but I would kind of compare him a little. He's a little Tony Stark-esque.
He's a fan of sitting in chairs.
Yes.
He loves.
Which, who isn't?
I love that he just fights. I was like, oh, is he handicapped?
No, I thought that too when I first saw him. I was like,
down.
Right.
Like,
I was like,
I don't
oh,
for this.
He's a disabled superhero. Just like, no. He just wants to have a good sit. And like, same guy, honestly.
I loved that the Green Lantern they decided to start with in this was the dorkiest and goofiest one. Guy Gardner.
Is it like a specific one that they're doing? A specific Green Lantern?
That's like a specific guy.
He is, there have been several Green Lanterns and he is a specific
Green
Lantern. And that hair, it comes from the comics.
That is a comic
so
book.
Unfortunate.
No, it's so terrible looking and so great.
He killed it though. Nathan Watson, that's he was a great
Fillion. Yeah.
I almost said Lane, which would have been very funny.
Nathan Lane is the Green Lantern.
I
wish she had a little bit more to do. I feel like she was kind of the one who was most underserved.
That is exactly what I was going to say. If I had one note, I'm like, if you can just give her like one more thing to do in the next movie.
And like,
she just kind of felt like sort of the surly one that doesn't do much, just kicks ass.
Right. Yeah. Like, she doesn't have a whole lot to say, but she'll just come in and fight and like knock everybody down and throw Netanyahu onto the ground. Which... I was honestly, I like every time that we cut back to like that subplot, I was like, this is insane. I am like surprised that this is in a movie. I'm not complaining that it's in a movie.
I love it.
But it was really just sort of like, wow, I cannot believe that like a major motion picture is doing this, because it's almost the sort of thing where like with a minor rewrite, you could very easily look at it as like Russia and Ukraine or something.
Correct.
But like the fact that they specifically say that I can't remember the guy's name, but like the really sleazy, awful president of the foreign country is like Boravia president is like, he's one of America's they're one of America's biggest allies, and the country that they're invading like actually like kind of sucks and has a bad track record for human rights. And so it's kind of like, as soon as like you put those things in the movie, it's like, okay, like I see what we're doing here.
I love it. I think it's an incredibly bold thing to then pair it with an essential message of this movie, which is literally just like, be kind to one another.
Regardless of like how shitty you may perceive a country to be, that doesn't give someone else the right to like come in and just start slaughtering everyone.
I was also just deeply impressed they could hold that, and that they could also hold a very kind of more joyful, lighter tone, while also not skimping on the emotional depth of stuff. Like, I don't know, like I thought when Lex gets the falafel guy, like that was,
I was, yeah, I was,
he's just being set up
surprised.
As like a side kind of mascot-y character, but no, now it's like really like, no, the stakes are high and it's very sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess like also we don't get a finished thread on like the whole like translated message snafu, and that will maybe come back in the future as well.
So I googled it a little bit just because I was curious if there was any sort of like word from James Gunn about like what the deal is with this, and apparently like according to James Gunn, he has said that like that is true and factual, like the message is indeed that it's not that there was some sort of mess up or mistranslation or someone fucking with it, but apparently like in his world the story is going to be that they were like, yeah, no, go to Earth and like be in charge and like have sex with a bunch of women, make sure you have a lot of kids, and like do great, have fun, kid.
And for what it's worth, this is a turn that has happened a few times in the comics.
Whatever his name is, the dude is like Jor-El. Not necessarily a nice boy.
Yeah,
no, like there's straight up like, oh, some of the suit, like Jor-El was a fascist, Jor-El was a eugenicist, like they go down that road. They've never done that in the like big screen adaptation.
Which was kind of why it was a little shocking, frankly, because like I think that is a very big swing to take for the movies, which have largely portrayed Krypton as like a very good place populated by and large with very good people. Right.
Yeah.
Who like know how to be good and know that you got to get rid of the bad guys and chuck them into geometric shape and space. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, the movie does it very well where it's like, no, it makes more sense to sort of vault the parents who raised you and taught you all your values.
Right. Which I kind of loved, like
these randos
loved...
that like gave you one message and said fuck off now.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed it a whole lot more than I thought I was going to, so made me actually excited to see where things go for the DC movies. So
I believe Supergirl is next.
Yes,
I did not realize that they're apparently adapting a specific run of Supergirl where she is this like hard drinking, she goes to red planets so she can get drunk kind of party girl. So I don't know, I loved that she just shows up for this like end joke, and I am looking forward to see where that goes.
I'm hopeful.
Doesn't she call Superman a bitch?
I think so.
It's great.
Yeah. Lee, do you want to real quick go into Fantastic Four before we wrap it up?
Yeah. Am I still, you saw that too or no?
I did not yet. I'm hoping,
I think we might in
Pittsburgh, but I haven't yet.
No, I really liked it. I said already in our thread that which was Chris was alluding to, I think, that it gave me similar vibes to Superman of returning to like a brighter, fresher aesthetic and sort of narrative. I don't know much about Fantastic Four. I don't know anything really about. I've only seen the really old movie with Chris Evans.
Okay.
So this was
Michael Chiklis.
All the other people who were in it. I know the guy who plays Mr. Fantastic back then, but I don't remember his name.
Ewan Griffith.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who was like kind of having a moment, but then it kind
he
of
was,
ended
yeah.
after that.
Yeah, I feel bad for him, but yeah.
So I liked Four. I don't know if that was like. Obviously, it wasn't a great movie, so I can't imagine that it's the typical thing for the Fantastic Four. But one thing that it did that I like that we didn't do in this version of it was Michael Chiklis's character, the Thing, that was like super emo about becoming a rock dude because he used to be a human and he had a wife or something, and he's like, "Whoa, now I'm a big rock dude, and I'm not attractive and human, and I can be with my wife."
Right.
He's like has a lot of angst about that. Whereas like how do I say his full name? What's his name? Chris Evan Moss.
Evan
Moss Baccarat, which is how I say it now.
Burt Baccarat, yes.
Evan Moss Baccarat's version of the Thing is just a chill dude, just a guy, just having not that he's like chipper all the time, but he just has like a great little character, and he still goes through like his old neighborhood and is like, what's that? All the people, even though like renowned, such to the extent that like they're introduced on a talk show as like, they're everyone's favorite people on Earth. Literally, they're it. Like, there are protectors. He still just kind of walks around his like whatever city neighborhood. Is it New York City they're supposed to be in?
It's usually New York.
I don't know if he's supposed to be playing Jewish or he's in a Jewish neighborhood and then he meets this like random Jewish lady. The one that you were talking about, Chris, you were like, oh, she's in this movie. She is just like a random Jewish lady and that he meets that is like works at a synagogue. I thought she was a teacher, but then later on they go into a temple. So I'm not sure if she works at the temple.
Historically, he is one of Marvel's like more well-known Jewish characters.
Okay.
So, it's basically him and Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, so like it's just him walking around like getting, he'll like get, could be like getting black and white cookies at the deli, and like everyone, all the kids will be like, oh, lift a car for us Thing, and he's like, oh, you kids. No, he was great. Obviously, Pedro Pascal was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I've, again, very much like, as I told Chris, like a very like Lee version of the character, where it's like the type of character that I play in D&D a lot, where I think at one point he specifically says, like, it's my job to think of all the worst things that could happen and then plan for every possible contingency for those things. Like, just kind of constant perma frown on his face, like permanent sort of tick of worries all over his face.
Because you're just constantly trying to anticipate everything that might happen.
Yeah. And yeah, overall, like, very cool. The aesthetic holds up throughout the movie. Like, they have like a faster than light spaceship, but it's like very like rocket looking, and it sort of slots into this like weird thing in that they keep in space. And yeah, all of the aesthetics are really great.
I love the look of Herbie from what I've seen too, just as a
Herbie
little,
is great,
like,
and they put
robot.
Little cassette tapes in them. Yes. I'm not sure what the cassette tapes I guess they're like different programming modes or whatever. Uh-huh. But yeah, and he doesn't really talk, he just kind of makes like
he like buzzes and like burbles.
Yeah,
kind of,
it's kind of like R2-D2 where he makes beep boop noises and everyone seems to understand what he's saying. But yeah, how much of like the plot do they give away in the trailer? Because I don't know how much I want to say.
All I know in the trailer,
I mean, I know
is
Galactus
that,
is on the way.
There's Galactus, and I know Galactus
the
wants
Surfer
their baby.
Yeah,
the Silver Surfer is the Herald of Galactus, as usual.
Yeah.
And it has something to do with like the baby. Galactus wants their baby.
Yeah, they're having a baby. Invisible Woman's having a baby. Also, Invisible Woman gets like a huge sort of upgrade in prominence in this movie, where they kind of showcase her as like being like a good, like a really good diplomat or something. Like, she has some sort of position as like, the Mole Man is a character in the movie, and she's known for like brokering a deal with Mole Man to
like peace with the Mole
Man, peace with the Subterranean or whatever.
I mean, I do, because one of the things I don't really remember the like the Fantastic Four movies that you were talking about, the Chris Evans, Yoan Griffith ones, super well.
Yeah.
The one thing I do remember is that in those ones, it really felt like the Invisible Woman was just kind of there as like, check out the tits on this lady.
Because it was Jessica Alba.
Right. And it was like, there was so much like, and I'm not blaming her there, but there was so much like sort of, what's the word, like objectifying her?
Yeah.
Almost. Like, she's right, and she's like literally like naked, like you don't see anything, but like she's naked in one of the movies too, and it's just like, why is this here? Like, this literally feels like it's here because the creative team was like super horny one day and was like, hey, we gotta get her naked. Eh? And just I'm so glad that like she has actual things to do, it isn't just like something there to be jerked off to.
Yeah, there's a really great scene where like during her like pregnancy, he's like Pedro Pascal, Mr. Fantastic, is doing all kinds of like crazy ass scans to be like, what's gonna be wrong with our baby? And she's like, you want to see your baby? And she just like makes her like stomach invisible so that he can just like see it.
That's good.
So that's, yeah,
that's really fun.
It's good. And the guy who plays Eddie Munson is really great as Storm.
Yeah, I'm
Johnny
excited to
Storm.
See. Yeah, I'm excited to see him because I feel like he was the one I was sort of most on the fence about, just like based
he's not,
on
he's
what
not
I'm
the
do-
typical choice.
Right,
you
right,
would
right,
think.
Right. So yeah. Like, I'm interested in seeing how it works.
That's no offense to his looks. It's just, you know,
it's
a different take.
Right. It's not the first person I would have thought of.
Is there like a and obviously he's obviously older too, so this is not necessarily gonna apply, but is there a version of like himbo that applies to like more twinkie looking men, like skinny guys? I think that's how I would describe Johnny Storm in this movie.
Yeah, I would have to think of if there is such a phrase, but it feels like there ought to be.
Yeah, that's kind of what he is in this movie, and which isn't to say that he's not smart, but he definitely is, like, he approaches problems like a himbo would.
Okay, I'm on board.
Yeah. Silver Surfer was fun, the aesthetic was fun there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was in the trailer, but one of Johnny Storm's first questions is like, is that part? He like flies up after her when she tries to leave, and he's like, is that surfboard part of your body or is it separate? Like, later on, it like flies off, and he's like, well, that answers my question.
Is Robert Downey Jr. in it a lot? Is he in it at all?
He's in it at all. I mean,
okay.
There's a credit scene that maybe is what
okay. Because I mean, obviously, I knew that like he is Victor Von Doom now because of multiverse nonsense and whatnot.
Yeah, they definitely set up like,
which
they're going to come back
tired.
And they're probably going to go into the other dimension.
Okay, so we already know, again, at the risk of spoiling things from Thunderbolts, that there is some interdimensional traveling going on anyway.
Yeah,
but I was curious if Robert Downey Jr. like even popped up really in it that much, or, and I guess the answer seemingly is no, he does not.
I mean, you don't see his face, I'll tell you that
much.
You see like Some you see an allusion to Robert Downey Jr., but okay. I don't even. It could easily not have been him.
It's just okay. An interesting. Here's what I would just like to ask. You don't have to spoil it necessarily. But
I will if you guys don't care.
Is he a part of the Fantastic Four's like origin story? Because he is in the comics. He's like the fourth person.
I mean, as far as I know,
he'd be
not.
The Fantastic Fifth, wouldn't he?
The movie is wholly focused on like Galactus, baby, and they got to figure
Franklin,
out how to stop Galactus.
Yeah. Franklin was basically the like center of the Marvel world for a pretty long time.
Right.
Yeah. And at the in the I'll say if I'll just put a warning, if you guys don't mind, I can say what the mid-credit sequence is.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm fine with it.
I'm about to say it. So in the mid-credit sequence, it's just like 5 years after the epilogue. So I think Franklin is like five at this point.
Uh-huh.
And she's like reading a book to him, then she goes to get a snack, she comes back. And it's just like the back of Dr. Doom with like the mask. So it's really obviously him. And he's just sort of like looking on his knees, like looking at Franklin. He hasn't done anything yet. And that's just kind of like, it's just like she walks out and is like, ah, and that's it. So it's like Dr. Doom has, I guess, like found Franklin and is like just kneeling in front of him, talking to him or doing something. We don't know.
Okay.
But I don't know if that was Robert J. Jr. or just.
Right.
Yeah,
there is like a whole other theory that I keep seeing online now that they're like, actually, maybe is this a misdirected Robert Downey Jr. is not Dr. Doom or something like that, which I've not read anything into because I haven't seen the movie yet. So like, I can't base this off anything. But it is interesting how like a lot of people now seem to be like, but maybe not or something like that. So
I don't know if they're that smart at this point.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the same thing. It feels a little bit unlikely that like that's a lot of work for like a big misdirection. But what do I know? But
I was looking at the Mole Man part of this Wikipedia page because he's Paul Walter Hauser is really funny as him.
Uh huh. I didn't know Paul Walter Hauser was the Mole Man. That's great.
And it just says Shackman compared Elder, the Mole Man, to the a leader of a labor union with humanity and the focus on a community and taking care of his people.
I mean, that's an interesting take on the Mole Man.
Well, he's not like a villain per se in this movie because he's like they're at peace or whatever. But there is like, you know, he'll show up because they need his help occasionally or whatever. Or they need to ask him something. And like, it's clear that like he and Mr. Fantastic and Reed Richards still have beef or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like verbally scuffle.
Yeah.
There's like a, I don't know. I won't say that it's a good joke that he does later on in the movie. Spoil has something should be a surprise, but he's just a funny guy.
Interesting. Okay.
It's a really good movie with, again, a silly, it's definitely has like high stakes and like drama, but is bright colored and really cool looking to watch.
Okay. Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah. Ditto. I'm hoping that I get to knock off a few movies when we're in Pittsburgh. So hopefully that'll be one of them.
Yeah. Let me know what you think when you see it.
Yeah. No, I definitely will.
Joseph Quinn, that's the dude.
Joseph Quinn, yes, that's him. That's
not Eddie Munson.
Johnny Douche, yeah.
You're lucky I remembered the character name.
I was impressed you remembered Eddie Munson, honestly.
Yeah, well, he was the DM. He was the DM, so
that's true.
I don't remember the DM's name from Stranger Things. I got problems.
So he has a special place in your heart.
Yeah.
All right, having covered the summer blockbusters thus far, I guess we'll call it quits for today. We'll be back in 2 weeks with our full length. Episode about The Apple, closing out our summer of unhinged musicals. As always, draftpack.com is the website. Podcasts are on the usual apps and places you listen to podcasts. Rate, subscribe, what have you there. And we'll bide out and see you all later.
Bye.